Hello there, this is Crystal, and you're listening to the Crystal Archive podcast.
Welcome to the Crystal Archive Podcast, episode number 32. I'm Mr. Crystal, your host, for what will surely be one of our longer podcasts. Well, the last podcast, number 31, was recorded back in April 2003. Today is July 12, 2014, so I think this is the first podcast when it's been significantly longer than a year between episodes, and I, of course, want to apologize for that. That's really unacceptable. Lots of stuff has gone on, more than I actually remembered. There's been two E3s. There's been three moves on my part. I've moved three times since the last podcast, which has something to do with the fact that it's been so long. And a bunch of other stuff, which I'll be getting into more during the show. So with that, let's get started. There is one small note I want to mention about the podcast itself, and that is that I know many of you have reported to me via email and other things that the podcast doesn't seem to be working correctly on the iTunes store and within iTunes itself. So if you were to take the subscription feed and try to subscribe to it via iTunes through the regular podcast system, it won't work. I don't really know why it won't work. It might actually work now. But back then, it was failing to work, and I had tried to fix it and was unable to. Something changed on Apple's end. I'm doing what I should be doing, but it doesn't seem to want to work for me. So I'm going to have another look at it soon, and hopefully that'll work. But in the meantime, people have kind of moved on. Now they listen to their podcasts via YouTube or Facebook or whatever. So I'm, of course, going to release this on YouTube. You're probably hearing it on YouTube. But that's for another day. Hopefully I'll get that fixed. So, with that, let's do what we always do at the beginning of our podcast, which is, of course, going back and looking at all the news, all the significant news that's happened since the last podcast. Now, because of all the stuff that's been going on, just thinking back, I was like, there's not much to talk about. I mean, I spent almost a year with very few posts on the Crystal Archive, and it's true. I've had very few posts, but a year is a long time, and so there is a lot to cover. So I'm going to do all this fairly quickly without going into too much detail. You can always go back and look at the different posts on the site to see what you missed. So, in forward chronological order, here's the stories that's happened since last podcast, not counting a couple that I'll be going into more detail into later on the show. So, first off, we found out that Google Chrome OS, their standalone browser-based operating system that they ship on Chromebooks, they've been using code names that feature various video game characters, including Star Fox characters like Fox and Peppy and Slippy and that sort of thing. So that was pretty cool. Nice nod to things. Google programmers are known for making little nods to pop culture and things they personally like, so I think that was a good thing. Retro Studios' secret project that they've been working on for a long time, and which was long believed to be either a Star Fox game or another Metroid game, was in fact the next version of their Donkey Kong Country series, which I hear is very good, but a little disappointed that it wasn't a Star Fox or even a Metroid game, frankly. But you know, now they've released that game, who knows? I mean, they're working on something else now. No, I don't even think there are any rumors yet about what it is. But given the next bit of some news later on in the podcast, I don't think it's Star Fox because of some other things we'll get to. So E3 2013 came and went, and alas, no Star Fox news was to be had. The tears flowed, including my own. I didn't really cry, though. That's just for effect. In that time period, I wrote a huge editorial about the possibility and legitimacy of having Crystal in a Smash game, as well as releasing a high-resolution Crystal Smash fan art that I had commissioned years early in a planned attempt to really, really try and push hard for Crystal in the game by using various techniques such as petitions. But in the end, I got busy, I couldn't do it, and then later on I was kind of coming to my senses and realizing that online petitions and petitions in general don't really change things per se unless you go and are physically there. Online petitions are a dime a dozen. I'm unfortunately, or fortunately, as the case may be, you should see some of the petitions out there. But anyway, so I simply wrote an editorial expressing my views about why Crystal would be a good fit for Smash Brothers, not because I personally like her, but because of her attributes as a fighter and the unique gameplay mechanics that her character would enable, such as being the only staff-based character, which now I think is actually not true, given a new character that was just recently announced. And she'd also be a female character. She's very popular, one of the most requested characters all the way back to Brawl days. So, who knows? Now, she hasn't been announced even now, and it's not looking like she's going to be in the game. I mean, it's still a possibility. There's still three or four new characters that they have yet to be revealed, but they're getting towards the end of the characters they can reveal. So, if she's not in the game already, she's probably not going to make it, except there might actually be another possibility. So, I'll get into that later on in the podcast once again. So, leaving that aside for the moment, on to the next thing, which was several times during this year-long period, I've made some drastic and not-so-drastic changes to the site's theme, all with the effect of trying to make it more consistent, smaller, faster, quicker to load. And I achieved those goals and also worked on some caching schemes to make the site really load a lot faster, because loading times on such a media-heavy site like mine is one of the killers. So trying to make it go as fast as possible. And I did. I did cache some things, and I used some better techniques and improved it quite a bit. Hopefully you've enjoyed those faster load times. Back in 2013... on the July 4th weekend, I believe it was, I went to the Everfree Northwest Brony Convention in Seattle for the second year in a row. I met one of you, a site reader, there, and we talked briefly, but unfortunately, it was kind of a weird meeting because neither of us kind of knew what to say, but it was cool to meet you. Your name is slipping my mind right now, but you know who you are. Anyway, that year, I also dressed as Future Twilight Sparkle in my first ever cosplay attempt, at least that wasn't, Halloween, which I don't really count. And I won the costume contest, much to my surprise. I played with the whole Metal Gear Solid Future Twilight Sparkle thing, and I went out on stage in a box, and then I threw it off of my head in very dramatic fashion. And the judges really liked that, particularly one guy who was like, as I understand it, the biggest Metal Gear fan. So I won that year, and that was just a fantastic time all around. Big, big convention, lots of fun. Next, Foxtype, a friend of mine, and the person who's primarily been responsible for helping get the videos of Ayano's Crystal cosplay, that fantastic, I think it's pronounced Kitaguri cosplay, with the skin-tight fur suit and the plastic molded face of Crystal, which just looks about as close as you can get to the real-life game image. Well, he unfortunately had some serious digestion system issues, and he actually had to go to the hospital for surgery and recovery, and I believe he's still in some form of recovery, although I think he's finally been able to go home, but he's still going through physical therapy and occasional surgeries to get that fixed up. But hopefully by the end of this year, he's going to be, you know, as good as new. He's kind of a, as he described it, he is a gray fur. He's getting up there in years. So, you know, this kind of thing happens as you get older. Not necessarily usually this drastic, but health problems. So, you know, we wished him well and prayed for him, and he seems to be doing okay. So that's good. But it was a big scare at first because I wasn't really sure where this was going or how serious it was, because all I had to go on was his phone calls. And in some cases, it wasn't even him who could call me. It was I believe it was his sister who had to call me because he was not even able to use the phone. So the next bit of news was that someone, and I'm not sure who it was, but they decided it was time to sell their Star Fox collection, which included some seriously hard-to-find collectibles, at least two things that are the only known examples of those things, one of which is a parachute, a Star Fox parachute, which was either used to... I can't remember what the story was, but back when they were promoting the original Star Fox, they released the game, the weekend competition game at various Toys R Us's around the store and the way or around the nation. And the way that they promoted that is they either had a guy parachute down to deliver the games, or they airdropped them with the parachutes. I can't remember, but a parachute was definitely used, and the games definitely fell from the sky. It was a big event in several places. Anyway, one of the items that was for sale was a parachute, a Star Fox parachute, which is ridiculous. Now, he wanted for all these things, a bunch of other stuff too, a mere $6,000. I checked the auction just now, and it's ended, obviously, but it looks like four people made him offers, but he didn't accept any of them. So, who knows? Maybe it'll go up for sale again. I don't know. Some students began work on a prototype Oculus Rift-based Star Fox game. Now, Oculus Rift, for those you don't know, is the leading innovator in a next-generation virtual reality headset that features extremely precise head tracking and high-resolution images. And their new one, the Oculus Rift 2, I hear, is fantastic. And it's also been the inspiration for Valve and Sony to get back in the VR game once again. So hopefully in the next few years we'll be seeing a revolution in VR-based gaming. I can think of few games that would be more suitable for VR than a Star Fox game, particularly if you get to play from the perspective of being in the cockpit. So you can look in all directions and aim, and use your head to aim the where you fire. Anyway, these students are working on this demo game. I haven't heard much from them since then, but hopefully they've got something playable. And I think they're using Unity, so in theory they'll be able to release it so that anybody can play it just by visiting a web page and having that the Unity player installed. So we'll have to look into that. Dark Fantasy Films has once again scheduled and then later completed an interview with Alessia Glidewell about her work in various games, including Portal and her voice work as Crystal in Super Smash Bros. Brawl and Star Fox Assault. Dark Fantasy Films also offered an autographed, signed picture from Alessia Glidewell to anyone who could answer or who could ask the best question, as picked by Alessia. Alessia did pick one of our readers, which, congratulations to him. I don't have the name on hand, but it was a very good question, and I believe it was my favorite question too. Actually, it was so cleverly worded. It said something to the effect of, "Do you ever get tired of being as awesome as you are?" Which I immediately said, of course, like, I see somebody who's playing a win here, okay? I mean, just pulling out all the stops, not even pretending to be an innocent question. You're buttering up the interviewee like nobody's business, and I thought that was the best question, and that's the one Alessia picked. And unfortunately, we didn't get to see her actually answered on camera for the video interview because the video cut out. What is it with interviews with Alessia and the interview software cutting out? It happened to me, too, when I interviewed her. And that's when we had to have actually a second interview. It was crazy. So anyway, that happened. So then I was working on partially restoring the different sections of the site. I got about half of the 3D section restored, including Gray Fox Fire's very famous, very popular crystal rig and model. I also got the next section. I got an initial section for the fan games back up because the randomizer released a series of Crystal Brawl mods that feature her adventures outfit and her staff as a weapon. And you can download that now from the Crystal Archive, and later on, of course, I'll go back and add the rest of the mods and the fan games and the 3D models. I haven't gotten time. But I did try this year. I did try further getting the site restored, so it's something. Next, Primawolf. Now, this is one of my favorite news articles of the entire year. How do I pronounce this? Priam Wolf. Priam Wolf created an amazing life-size crystal papercraft. They took the 3D model from either Brawl or Salt. I think it was actually the trophy, like the literal trophy model from Brawl, and modeled it using the papercraft software, printed out onto, no doubt, hundreds of pieces of paper, and painstakingly built this life-size crystal. It's fantastic. If you haven't seen the video or the pictures, you should. It's amazing. I finally posted a couple more animations by Rife 2002. Now, this is the person who took Gedanstrom's crystal models and rigged them so that they could be animated. Rife 2002 is a very good animator, and Rife took a couple of voice clips from Star Fox Adventures that were never actually used in the game and built cutscenes for them. So it's Crystal doing these lines that were never used in a Saurian-like environment, all fully animated with the fur movement and I think rain in one of them. It's raining in one of the scenes, and it's really well done. So check those out if you haven't. Just generally, as I found them, I posted a bunch of Star Fox related projects and wallpapers as I found them. Anything I find interesting that's Star Fox related, especially during the drought of lack of Star Fox news of the last couple years, there's no reason not to post some Star Fox related things, even if it's not directly Crystal related. I know you're interested in Star Fox in general. That's how you found out about Crystal, after all. Well, most of you anyway. Now, Gray Firefox. The creator of the most popular, well, I shouldn't say the most popular, the most realistic crystal rig and model, disappeared a couple of months or years ago, maybe about a year and a half ago. He disappeared. He just disappeared. His DeviantArt page was deactivated. His Fur Affinity was abandoned. And I have his personal email address. I know his real name. And even my emails to him have gone completely unanswered. No one knows what happens. He just disappeared. A lot of people have been asking me, where is this guy? I'm doing my best to find him, but he hasn't responded at all. So I talked about it on the site to mention, hey, he disappeared. There was a couple pictures that he left behind that I don't actually have. I didn't actually get a chance to download before he left. But he did give me personal permission to post all of his pictures on the site. So if I could get them, then I could put them on. And someone did actually have a copy. The internet didn't have a copy, but this guy did. So he sent me those pictures and I posted on the archive. So technically the archive has the most information you're going to find about Gray Firefox and his work is anywhere on the internet. It's just because he just disappeared everywhere else. Man, I don't know. It's crazy. I hope he comes back because he was still working on version 5 of the rig, which looked to be really, really nice. On January 8, 2014, we celebrated the Crystal Archive's 8th birthday. That's 8 years of Crystal Archive goodness. Now, some years are better than others, 2013 being a pretty bad year, all things considered. There's only one podcast that year, if I remember correctly, but hey, I'm trying to rectify that now. Anyway, so 8 years. This is the longest single project I've ever worked on, by far. And it still continues on. And hopefully, with this podcast as our initial work, it will be the signal of another golden age of the Crystal Archive posts and content. I hope so, at least. Now, there were, as I mentioned just now, there was a long span here with no posts. And I decided, you know, it's been a long time. I ought to explain myself why it's been so long since I've posted anything. And I proceeded to explain a series of real-life issues that I was dealing with at the time. So, as some of you know, I moved out to California about 5 years, four or five years ago, to take a job with a small game company making Facebook games, social games. Wasn't a big fan, but hey, I mean, I was trying to do my best within the confines of the work environment I had. About a year and a half later, Electronic Arts, EA, bought our company to be their kind of foothold in the social game market, which we were for a time, and then they decided to shift us onto mobile games because social games were dying. And anybody who's worked in that industry, especially us programmers, engineers, and artists, we can tell that the same thing that they were saying about social games back when I started is the same thing that they were talking about mobile games now. Oh, it's this huge market that's going to grow infinitely in size and account for 100% of gameplay in the future. And we knew that wasn't true. It didn't happen with social games, and there was no reason to believe. They were projecting their dramatic increases out to infinity, which you should never do, because it's never going to happen. So anyway, a series of really weird business politics things happened, and some serious creative differences between myself and a lot of the other programmers too, and artists, I should say. It wasn't just the programmers who realized something was wrong. Okay, the artists did too. It was the management kind of didn't really know what was going on, and they wanted some things that we knew were going to result in bad games, or at least bad business. Like, even if we finished a game that was technically good, it would not be financially successful. And they were like, we don't care, do the stupid project, that's what we're paying you for. Unfortunately, in my case, they weren't paying me for that. They were paying me to be an engineer, a developer, someone who solves problems. They didn't want me to solve problems anymore. They wanted me to throw code at the problem until it worked, which is the exact opposite of software engineering. I had a moral and intellectual problem with this, and it turns out they had a financial problem with me. And I managed to get another job within 2 weeks of learning this fact. They were going to fire me the next week. Not because I was doing badly, because I was doing too well. They were going to fire me for trying to be a good programmer. They were going to fire me for doing too good a job. I had perfect reviews from my peers. My direct manager and all my coworkers thought I was a great programmer. Maybe a little sensitive about quality, but definitely a good one. But politics is politics, and certain managers didn't like me, and I was going to be out the door. But fortunately, I got another job. A job with a guy, a friend of mine, who I met at church, who had previously asked me to moonlight on some projects. I didn't really have time to moonlight because of all the game industry stuff, but I told him, hey, I can work for you full time now. And remarkably, he agreed. And so now I work for him. I get to work from home, which is a much better job, but it was a big transition. It's also not in the game industry. I no longer work on games professionally. I'm now a web developer, which is fine too. I like that just as much, as you can probably tell from the quality of the website I built for the Crystal Archive. I really like working with HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, and now I get to do that for like 8 hours a day, every day, and use like the latest techniques. And best of all, my manager, who is not only my friend, but also a very talented programmer himself, really cares about quality And that's something that there's just no replacing. You can't get around that. If you have to work for a company where you as an individual really care, and I don't understand how people can work at places where they don't care about what they're doing. I would go crazy if I had to work every day and utterly not care about what I was doing. But I do care. Even if it's something I don't like doing, I care about making it really good quality. So my manager also feels this way, that quality is its own reward, and quality is ultimately the way to achieve financial and personal success. So anyway, long story short, I got a great job after quitting EA, and I love it. And in theory, it gives me more time, but as you'll see in a minute, there were a lot of other things too. So getting that new job also meant I had to move to another place in California for 6 months before I then had to move again back to Louisiana. Actually, technically, I didn't have to move, but I wanted to. Now that I work from home, I can be closer to my family who lives in Louisiana. Living out in Seattle for DigiPen and then in California for job meant I only got to see my family twice a year. Now I can see them 5 or 6 times a year, actually, which I'll explain in a minute. So I moved to Louisiana for 6 months to help out my brother. And now, like a month ago, I've moved again to Texas, Austin, Texas, which is where I currently reside and plan to stay for quite some time. And now that I work from home, I have no reason to move again. Thank goodness, because I've calculated it. I have moved 9 times in the past 12 years, since high school. Since high school, I've moved 9 times. And it's getting to where I don't know if I can do it again. But anyway, okay, so lots of moving. That's one of the reasons why. Getting a new job, moving, those are 2 reasons why it's been so long without really significant updates to the Crystal Archive. Another thing that happened is during my trip down to back to Louisiana from California, I ran through Texas during an ice storm, a snowstorm, and I ran off the road. Didn't really damage anything. I was fine. Car was fine. It clipped the rearview mirror, but that was easily fixed. But then less than a minute later, another car slipped on the same patch of ice and rammed into me and totaled my car. The good news is nobody was hurt. Less than $200 to $300 of my stuff in my trunk was damaged. Most of my stuff was perfectly fine. But they did have to total my car. It was a pretty old car, so I didn't have a car. So that took some time. I had to buy another car. Then I had to move to Texas, as I mentioned. And I had to get all my physical possessions organized, because when I moved off to DigiPen in Washington and then again to California, I left like more than half of my physical possessions in my closet back home at my parents' house because I didn't need it. Well, now that I moved to Texas and really for real being on my own this time, I really wanted to get things pared down to just the essentials. So I've been getting rid of tons and tons and tons of stuff. And I've managed to get rid of about 25% of my physical possessions. And I've got more to go. But that takes time to go through that all. So that took some time. I also found out that my various family members were having health and financial issues, most of which I didn't know about until I was closer to coming home. They just didn't want to tell me or didn't come up. And you don't hear about that sort of stuff when you're gone. And that's really a bummer. I had to do some little fallout from that. Fortunately, things are starting to get better now, although my grandmother now has cancer, and that's kind of a real bummer. But she's doing her chemo now, and looks like she's going to make it just fine after all. She's getting stronger all the time. So I really, holding out hope for her. And finally, this is something that happened in California when I worked at the game company. I spent so much time typing and programming for, sometimes 10 hours a day, every day, for weeks, and sometimes on the weekends too. Well, it seems like I've developed 2 small conditions. One is I've got some issues with my wrists hurting all the time, or at least they feel weary all the time. Actually, I can feel it right now. They're a little tingly in my wrist. And fortunately, it doesn't appear to be carpal tunnel, which is the common ailment you hear about for typing too much. But I have something else. It's related to another nerve called the ulnar nerve, and it goes along the outside edge, the outside side of your hand. And that is the thing that bothers me. And so basically it's not terrible, but it really makes me not want to type anymore. It wants me to reduce the amount of typing I do. Hence, I would work all day programming, and then I would say, you know what, I'm kind of tired. I don't have time to update the site. So that's another reason why, okay? And then lastly, and I didn't actually think of this during the post, but it's been becoming more and more apparent that I think from all that extra work I did at that game company and the really terrible political environment there, and it wasn't always bad, okay, but sometimes it would get really bad, okay? There's good days and there are bad days, and towards the end I was having lots of bad days. I think I actually got burnt out, like the physical burnt out condition, where I feel normal, I act normal, and I could work a normal day's work, but I'm just not as productive, not as engaged as I could be. And I sort of knew it too. I knew that I was not programming at my full capacity. But, you know, I was like, oh, it's because I'm tired from my wrists. But no, I think it was a mental thing too. And I only mention this now because after recognizing it a few weeks ago, I'm starting to see, especially after this week-long holiday I'll talk about in a minute, I think that I'm starting to get over it. I think I'm starting to get back to where I can really innovate and really work fast and hard at my real potential level at 100%. So hopefully that means I can do some real good on the Crystal Archive soon. Now, that was all negative stuff about why I couldn't do a lot of posts on the Crystal Archives, and I certainly don't mean to turn this into this is what's happening in Mr. Crystal's life, okay? I just thought I owed you a little bit of an explanation about the difficulties that are going on in my life. Everybody has them. I don't really want to spend too much time on it because that's detracting from time I could be spending actually solving the problem. But there were some good things that happened. Good things during 2013 and early 2014 that I really was encouraged by, and that is that I got to see my family again, finally. I have a new, better job that I love, and I love my coworkers. And I finally got to build my own computer, a really massively powerful Windows box that I've been using for Steam gaming and a couple other things, and hopefully I'll be able to do some other things in the future that are Crystal Archive related, maybe some advanced video editing, or maybe I can record Star Fox Adventures in HD or something, maybe. I don't know. We'll see. But anyway, that was exciting, and I was excited about that. Now, the last bit of news before I get into more detailed stuff is that this year in 2014, April 1st, I decided to not do an April Fool's prank this year. I did actually have some ideas, and I almost got started on it, but she just said, you know what, there hasn't been enough real news to make it worth it. I'm going to save that for next year. So I apologize, there was no prank this year, because I really love doing my pranks. It's my favorite internet holiday, April Fool's Day. So with that, now the rest of the old news is actually covered, stuff related to stuff that's happened very recently, especially Nintendo at E3. So I'll cover that next, and that's what I'm going to do right now. E3. Nintendo had a fantastic showing at E3. Let me just run down a bit about what happened. I'm sure most of you heard about it, but let me just summarize real quick, and I'm going to try and go through this pretty quickly. I've written it all out. So instead of doing a traditional press conference, they did a press conference via video, which made sure that everything went absolutely smoothly and there were no awkward moments like the other companies like EA, Ubisoft, Sony, and Microsoft had. And it was broadcast live for everybody in the world to watch at the same time. I, because I work from home, actually had it running myself. I was watching E3 the whole time, so I actually got to see all the press conferences, Microsoft, Sony, Ubisoft, and EA. I got to see all of their press conferences live. And then the next day, Nintendo did their press conference as a video, and it pretty much stole the show because while Sony, Microsoft, Ubisoft, and EA are essentially competing with each other in various ways for what I call the brown shooter genre, where almost every game is some variation on brown and involves shooting, Nintendo showed an amazingly colorful, unique, innovative set of very different games, and instead of showing crazy, over-the-top cinematic trailers for things, they spent almost their entire time showing actual, legit gameplay. And that's the big difference between what Nintendo showed and what everybody else showed. So what did they show? A whole bunch of cool stuff. First off, for Smash Brothers, they revealed three new characters, technically infinite characters, but let me explain that. So they got what's called the Mii Fighters, which allows you to use your Mii or any other Mii. Any Mii that you can make using the Mii Maker can be turned into one of three types of fighters. One can use brawling moves like punches and kicks. One has a sword and a bunch of sword-based moves. And another is basically like Samus Light with a beam cannon arm and a bunch of explosive energy weapon type things. And you can pick any Mii and then pick any style of Mii fighter to create an infinite number of combinations. They also released as a playable character Palutena, who is the one of the characters in the Kid Icarus series. I believe she's a goddess. And as I alluded to earlier, I think she actually uses a staff, so it would make Crystal not exactly unique in that sense. And lastly, their surprise reveal was Pac-Man at the very end of the show. And they showed off these new characters by having Iwata and Reggie Fils-Aimé duke it out Dragon Ball Z style on screen. It was amazing. If you haven't seen that video, you should, because they're like really going at each other with like these over the tops Dragon Ball Z moves. They showed off a new Kirby game, which is basically like Kirby's Canvas Curse, but it's for the Wii U. It's called Kirby and the Rainbow Curse, and instead of using their epic yarn style or a traditional 3D animated style, they're actually going for a claymation style. It looks very unique and interesting, so we'll have to keep an eye on that. Now, they had previously mentioned a new Yoshi game in the epic yarn style. They were going to call it Epic Yoshi or something. Well, they revealed it again this year, but now instead of being the yarn style, the yarn has been crocheted into knitted plushes. So they call that Yoshi's Woolly World, and it is just about the cutest thing you'll ever see. And it's also the style. The gameplay is not a simplistic Yoshi game. This has got the same kind of gameplay mechanics you saw back in the original Yoshi's Island, with the egg aiming and platforming and all that stuff. So it's looking really good. They had previously revealed Bayonetta 2, but the surprise was that they're going to release Bayonetta 1, which people have been complaining about because, you know, they're going to get to play the sequel, but then they can't play the original. Well, you can. The original Bayonetta will be bundled with Bayonetta 2, and you'll be able to play Bayonetta dressed as one of three Nintendo characters if you so choose. A Link costume, a Princess Peach costume, and a Samus's power suit inspired costume. They showed some more footage of The Legend of Zelda Hyrule Warriors, which is a frantically paced, fight hundreds of enemies at a time game with half a dozen playable characters, including my favorite, Midna. And she can even summon a wolf. Not Link, of course, but like a spirit wolf to run around on. And that game, I was kind of like, could be good, could be bad, I don't know what to think of this. Well, it's actually looking like really good now that they fleshed it out, and they showed tons of gameplay of it, so I'm kind of excited of it. There's a Mario Maker for the Wii U. Now, this is a game where you can design and play your own crazy Mario levels, including using some mechanics that aren't found in any Mario game, such as attach the flying wings for the Koopa Paratroopas. You can attach those wings to like any object, including like the flagpole or the piranha plants. You can make them fly, which is crazy. Now, if you'd ever played Super Mario 3D World, there's these little puzzle levels where you play as Captain Toad, and you can't jump, and you can't attack. You can only walk open doors like and activate switches. You can't like defend yourself. And so these puzzle platforming levels are shown off in isometric perspective. And it's basically you have to get so many different items before getting to the goal without dying. They're turning this into a full game. I'm not sure if it's download only or if it's retail also. But a lot of people, when they were playing that game, playing Super Mario 3D World, they were saying, oh, you should totally turn this into a real game. Well, Nintendo listened, and they did. Now, the surprise game that they managed to announce with no leaks at all was probably what many consider to be the sleeper hit of the show, and it's called Splatoon, and it's a 8-player team-based shooter where instead of bullets you use ink, and instead of gruff soldiers they are squid people. And so it kind of plays off of each other. You're a squid that can transform and swim through ink, and then you use the ink to shoot at your enemies and to cover the ground. And much like Smash Brothers is not a game about defeating your adversary, but rather knocking your adversary off the platform, so too is this game not like a traditional shooter. The winner is not the person who kills the most guys. The winner is the team that covers the most of the ground with their colored ink. And people had a lot of fun with this game. People were playing it on the show floor for hours and hours, and it looks like it's going to be a fantastic party game when it comes out. Now, this is a game that's going to be a little bit of a, for a different audience. Maybe you like it, maybe you don't. People tend to either really like these games or not, but Xenoblade Chronicles X, which had been previously announced, was finally shown off in detail. They showed a cinematic trailer and a lot of gameplay footage. It's going to feature a huge open world with lots of monsters to fight and an action RPG battle system. So you're running around, you're doing attacks, and then like physically dodging other attacks and powering up special moves. But all the while, you can keep on hitting the dudes for small amounts of damage on the enemies. And it's got lots of exploration, like literally a huge, huge world. So I'm personally looking forward to that because I like the occasional RPG. And then finally, the big one, the one that probably everybody is talking about, is a new Legend of Zelda Wii U HD game was shown off very, very briefly. It was more of a tech demo almost, but it was full gameplay. It was not pre-rendered at all. This was taking place in real time. And the key announcement that they made was that this Zelda game is going to be open world. If you can see a mountain in the distance, you can go to that mountain. You can physically climb it. And if there's a dungeon up there, you can go to that dungeon. As such, they're trying to work with different ideas so that you can approach different dungeons in different orders and from any direction, which is going to significantly change what types of dungeons are going to be possible, where they can be located, how you'll play through them, because as you can probably imagine, some dungeons may not be traditional dungeons in the sense that you go into them or you leave them, right? A dungeon could just be in the middle of a field, right? And you're doing the dungeon, but you're in open space. You can leave at any time from any direction, and you can approach the dungeon from any direction. So there's a lot of possibilities here. The graphical style is also good. It looks like they're combining everything they've learned from Skyward Sword, Wind Waker, and Twilight Princess to give a realistic bodily proportions and character shapes. But the graphical style is closer to cel shading and painterly shading that we've seen before in non-photorealistic Zeldas. And it's just colorful world, you know, like, I don't think it would be a Zelda game if it wasn't at least a little bit colorful. I think the grittiest Zelda game was Twilight Princess, and while that is my favorite, I like the parts of it that were not all gray and dark and brown the whole time. I like some color. It's a fantasy world after all. So anyway, I think they're going in a good direction with this. They showed off a ton of other games and other features that I just don't have time to go into. You should check it out if you haven't already. You can go to e3.nintendo.com. They still got all the information up. and all the videos and all that. They hosted a legit Smash Brothers tournament using the new Smash game, in which people could pick their characters once, and they had to play that character all through the tournament. And I watched that tournament. It was great. Fox won the fan favorite category, and Zero Suit Samus won the legit winner category. So Zero Suit Samus won all of her matches. Fox won most of his matches, but he was voted fan favorite. And at the end, I believe it was a competition between Zero Suit Samus and Fox. And Zero Suit Samus won in overtime it was a tiebreaker. Everybody has 300% damage, and Zero Suit Samus won with a throw, which is like the most risky moves you can do in the sudden death mode. Okay, and that's how he won. It was epic, and Reggie came out and personally presented the award, and it was amazing. And it was also the whole tournament was professionally commentated by a couple of people who commentate other gaming competitions, and that's something I hadn't actually seen before. So you might want to check that out. It's also online. And then finally, they did something for the actual days of E3, for 3 days where the show floor was actually open, which I believe was Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Nintendo held what they call their Treehouse Live, where they brought in developers, not media people, not spokesmen, not designers, well, some designers, but not like managers like they normally bring out at E3. They brought the actual people working on the actual games, sat them down, had them play their games, real games, not trailers, play the actual gameplay while commentating about what they were doing, why the game was built this way versus another, and showing literally 8 hours a day of video game footage, real game footage, all E3. And that right there is enough to say that Nintendo won E3. Even though it's not really a competition, Nintendo showed what the other companies would not, which is actual, legit gameplay. And at the same time, you, as the typical game-buying public, got to see, kind of, you know, pull the curtains back a little bit, get to see behind the scenes about how video games are made, something that I get to know about as a person who's made games, but it's fantastic to get to see that for me, because I get to learn the thought processes of other developers, but also especially for you, who gets to see, you know, what the techniques are like, what really making a game is really like, because I'll tell you, it's nothing like what you probably think it is. So check that out if you haven't. Literally all 8 hours for all 3 days, all of those videos are on the internet. You can look at all of them. It's fantastic. Check it out if you haven't. You might want to look for highlights, because that is a lot of stuff. I mean, I had it just running in the background while I was doing my work day. Okay? But who knows? I mean, maybe if you get some time, just like watch an hour or two every night or something. I don't know. It's certainly more interesting than the kind of stuff you get on cable sometimes. So anyway, so that was E3. Except there was one other thing. And that is Miyamoto let the cat out of the bag on some secret projects he's been working on, including a new Star Fox game. Now, this is very, very, very unusual. Nintendo, as a general rule, and I agree with this rule, does not usually show off prototypes, at least not to the public. They may talk about stuff they're working on with gaming press to, you know, give them an idea, and they've done that before for Star Fox. But this time, they actually had a playable demo of what's considered pre-alpha. As in, not only does it not work, not only does it... I mean, sorry, I don't mean it doesn't work. I mean, it. Not only does it probably have, like, tons of bugs, not only does it have, like, programmer art, terrible temporary art that's never going to make it to the final game because it's too low quality, but also the game mechanics themselves are not even finished. They were showing stuff that was prototypes, like literally prototypes. They were just making it just to see if they could make it. And Nintendo almost never shows off this kind of really new placeholder stuff. And when they interviewed Miyamoto about what he was doing and why, he'll explain why he did that. But let me explain what it was. So it was a very early Star Fox prototype featuring three different levels of gameplay, experimental gameplay, using old assets from Star Fox 64 just as placeholders, just so they can have something to show, so they could try the game ideas, okay? And also, and I'm going to go through a list of the people who actually got to play it. They interviewed Miyamoto. I'm going to read off all the facts that are known about this game, which is one of the main reasons I'm doing this podcast now, is so I can clear the air of all the speculation and just say, here is what we know about the next Star Fox game. Okay, but before I do that, real quick, there were two other smaller games. I think it was called Project Robot, and the other one's called Project Guard. And just they're also experimental. They were a little further along. But the one thing I wanted to mention about Project Guard was they actually used a Star Fox logo in that game. So it's heavily implied in other places, but I'll get to, that this game may actually, the gameplay may actually factor into the next Star Fox game. And just so you know, Project Guard, the prototype experimental game, involves shooting at robots kind of like tower defense style, but using these 12 different video cameras at the same time. So you can go in and you pick one of 12 video cameras, you switch to that video camera, then you aim and shoot at these robots that are attacking your base, and then you have to switch to another camera quickly because other robots are coming in from different entrances. Some robots can disable your cameras, some robots can take your cameras away. So you have to be like constantly switching cameras, and it's crazy. And they're also kind of designing it as a party game, so you can be focusing on what you're focusing on, and then the other people in your friends in the background say, go to camera three and shoot that robot because it's about to attack your camera. And so you can, okay, right? Because it's really impossible to keep track of 12 video feeds at the same time. So anyway, there was a little bit of Star Fox in that too. There was a Star Fox logo was on the cameras. So so that's that. So now let me go through. I looked at like four or five articles that were featured either people who actually got to play the demo or interviewed Miyamoto about the demo. And I've broken it down basically into a set of facts, things we know, and things they've said about the demo. So, without further ado, here we go. First up, Kotaku's review of the actual alpha Star Fox demo. So I've broken this up into a series of facts, okay? So I'm going to just kind of read them off as I go, and I'll comment on them as I go, okay? So first off, the Wii U gamepad will be the first-person view from inside the cockpit, while on the TV screen, you'll be shown the third-person traditional behind-the-R-Wing view. Secondly, Miyamoto wants to give players the option to fly and shoot independently. That means that you'll be able to control the way you're flying the crafts with one set of controls, and with another set of controls, either another person or you on the same gamepad using different part of the controller, aiming independently of where you're flying to shoot at enemies. Miyamoto found it difficult to fly and shoot at the same time during the valley parts of the previous games where you're on rails, you're going straight ahead. But he did like the dogfighting all range mode portions better, or he found them simpler anyway. So that may have something to do with why he chose to do the aiming independently of the direction. Now there were three gameplay modes in the demo. First, there was a typical all range mode style arena. A bunch of enemy fighters and tanks were there, and you have to aim and shoot at them. All the standard R-Wing moves were available, loop-de-loop, barrel rolls, U-turns, etc. And if the discussions were to be believed, it seems like the controls are pretty much what we'd expect. The controls work the same as, say, in Star Fox 64, which is good news, because I thought those controls were spot on. The R-Wing could also transform into a tank when you push down on the control stick, which is a feature in Star Fox 2, was never released. When you go to certain areas, you could push a button and transform into a two-legged mech and shoot that way. But anyway, you can turn into a tank. The reviewer said he found no advantage to using a tank over an R-Wing, but, you know, that could change. The reviewer also found he preferred to use the first-person cockpit view rather than the third-person view, because he could literally move the gamepad with its gyro sensor to aim, and he found that much more precise than using the control pad. Now, I think this is very interesting, because a lot of people have thought that the gyro sensing controls are not accurate enough or not as good, but in this case, I think they may actually be superior for both flying the craft and aiming. So even if you have to do both at the same time, right, you just point at where you want to go and where you want to shoot, and you're there, which sounds like it would be an interesting game to play. Much more interesting than, say, having the Wii remote and having to hold it a certain way to aim your craft. Like, I can just imagine that being really awkward, although I'd certainly like to give it a try. But this physical aiming with a screen where you're aiming, because you're looking down at the screen where you're aiming, that's very accurate. I've used the same sort of thing in the Ocarina of Time for the 3DS, which when you wanted to aim in first-person mode, you could literally move the 3DS and aim, and it was much faster and more accurate than using the control pads. The reviewer also found it slightly disappointing to have a lack of obstacles to run in his craft into. He was in this big open space with all these other fighters and tanks, but one of the thrills, at least he thought, with Star Fox games is having to avoid structures, having to fly through things, through buildings or caverns or canyons or whatever. But hey, I mean, this is just a demo, so they probably will add those kind of features later on. This is just a demo, and I can tell you from a person who makes games, making a big open arena is much easier than making a level scape with a bunch of vertical obstacles. Okay, the second gameplay mode was a dogfight arena, just like the previous one, except in this one, Star Wolf is there. Or I should say, Wolf O'Donnell is there shooting at your craft. Unlike the other craft, the tanks that you're fighting in the first mode, which are still there in this mode, I believe. But Wolf O'Donnell, will actually tail your craft. Well, the reviewer found that in this mode, looking at the TV screen was much more helpful because he could see when he's being followed, and then once he got himself not being followed and got himself behind Wolf O'Donnell, then he switched down to looking at the first-person mode to do his aiming and shooting. The third mode is a really unique one, and that is it takes place in a large area, also an arena in which you can go anywhere you want, but instead of flying an R-Wing, you're flying a helicopter-like thing. Actually, from the way they describe it, it sounds like this craft has two small wings on the sides, and they're using inducted fans blowing straight down, rather than the traditional helicopter look. It takes place in the middle of a city at dusk, and the Nintendo headquarters, the Japanese headquarters building, is physically there. You can see it. Like, I guess it has the word Nintendo on the side, because it does in real life. And there's also a Godzilla-like monster walking the streets, along with a bunch of other four-legged robots, which you can shoot. You can shoot the Godzilla monster, but it doesn't do anything. He's invincible. But you can destroy the robots. Unlike an R-Wing, which always goes forward, this craft, this helicopter-like craft, can hover. And basically, the player can hover over a building and then lower a robot via a tether from the bottom of the craft to a building or whatever's below. The robot can aim and shoot, and when the robot is down, you can use the gamepad's gyro sensor to aim and shoot, and you see it from the perspective of the robot, whereas on the screen you still see the helicopter. And you basically drop the robot down on the buildings where you can collect collectibles and shoot at enemies, and then bring them back up. And it was also fun because you could bring the helicopter up off the ground, but leave the robot still hanging from the tether, And basically, as the robot was swinging back and forth from the tether, you could shoot at enemies while in midair. I was unclear about whether the helicopter itself has offensive capabilities, but who knows at this point. It's all very alpha, very up in the air. Now, Miyamoto also admitted that the multiple screen idea will be a little bit confusing at first, but eventually will become essential to playing the game. Second nature, he says. Miyamoto also said that there will be both arena and valley levels, as in previous Star Fox games. So we will have all-range mode, as we saw in the demos, but we'll also get the more traditional on-rails thing. And that mode I personally prefer, so I'm glad that they're going to keep the classic staple of Star Fox horizontal levels going. So, as far as story, Miyamoto said that, today's gamer doesn't have a lot of time for a long story, and so he hopes to make this Star Fox game a more episodic game. So, it was a little ambiguous about what he meant, but essentially, the story is actually going to be made up of lots of smaller, self-contained stories, which you can choose to play or not. You don't have to play them. You don't have to play them in a sequence like you had to play the planets in previous games. So presumably, the story will actually make sense out of order or in a different order, or if you skip them entirely, some parts of it entirely, it may still make sense. Then there's there's also the speculation that he might actually be releasing multiple games in an episodic fashion, which is one of the primary theories right now. So who knows? But that could be bad, that could be good. Now, we won't get an epic, huge story, per se, but it also means we'll probably get tons and tons and tons of missions. And they could probably be released over time as DLC. So we'll see. That's a bit of speculation on my part. Miyamoto said the game should be released within a year, so before at E3 2005. Many people are skeptical of this, especially since Nintendo said, and Miyamoto said, that he's looking for partners for the further development of this game, which is kind of unusual if it's this late in the game. But, you know, if it's an episodic game, that may not be so unusual because they're not trying to make such a huge game. We'll see. They showed off this game very early at E3. To give themselves motivation to work hard on this game. So, because Nintendo doesn't like showing off incomplete stuff early, saying, yes, we will be showing this at E3 to all their employees, gave them a lot of motivation to get it as complete as they could before E3. And the more complete they could get it, the better. And I think they did a pretty good job given the time they had. Next was Time Magazine's interview with Miyamoto. Now, Miyamoto gave an interview about this and his other small projects at the beginning of the week, probably on Saturday or Monday. Time Magazine didn't understand about the embargo date, they actually released it before Nintendo's press conference, but then quickly took it down within minutes. But by then, the internet knew about it. So this is the facts that were known in the Time Magazine article. Internally, Nintendo was experimenting with Star Fox for over 6 years during the Wii's lifetime, but they didn't find a good enough idea to produce a game. Now, I find that fantastic. Nintendo is not satisfied with just improving the graphics, maybe writing a more epic story, and improving the sound and calling it a day, like just about every company out there. They had to have a unique, new, interesting either game or gameplay mechanic before they would release a game. And that's fair. I mean, Star Fox has historically been one of the big experimental titles. Star Fox, the original Star Fox, was the first 3D game on any console that I know of, but definitely on the N64, I mean the GameCube. The N64, Star Fox 64, brought the world the first Rumble controller. It was packaged with the game. Star Fox Adventures, not so innovative, neither was Assault, and neither was Command, and those kind of going downhill as far as the popularity goes. So I think they may be onto something, frankly. Although I certainly don't think that they could do... I certainly do think that they could do quite well by releasing a HD, epic Star Fox game. But the reason why Nintendo is Nintendo is because they take the time to be different and innovative. And so I can't really blame them that much, even though it has been a really long time between Star Fox games. The next thing the Time magazine article revealed was that the current demo that they showed off at E3 represents about 6 to 10 months of experimenting with the Wii U. They were using the old assets from Star Fox 64 and other games to make this game. So you know, it's not all new stuff, okay, but it's still... They're still working on innovating the gameplay. They haven't worked on any of the art or any of the sound yet. It's all placeholder, which is, and point of fact, is actually the correct way to make a game. You're supposed to make the game fun to play, so that means you have to experiment with a basically unplayable parody of the game because it's got so little graphics and so little sound or no sound until you make it so it's fun to play just by itself. And then you build stuff on top of that by making it all shiny and graphically amazing. And that's the way Nintendo does it, and that's why they're so successful and innovative year after year, is they're focused on fun. So that's just a little aside. Now, the Star Fox game will be a little bit complicated to play, Miyamoto said, because the aiming and flying is independent. But Miyamoto expects this and thinks that it is okay that, given what you will be able to do once you learn how to use the controls. He estimates it'll take about 30 minutes to an hour to get to where you really understand the controls, which I think is actually pretty low for a game of this complexity. However, he does expect that using the multiple screens at the same time, that will take a little bit longer to get used to. Miyamoto said that starting off, you'll probably hold the gamepad up in front of your face, so you can see both screens at once, the TV and the gamepad screen. You'll probably, but as you learn the game, okay, as you get more comfortable, you'll start, you know, focusing, looking down at the gamepad when you need to, and looking at the screen when you don't. Now, the experiments that they did focused on co-op flying, with one person to fly and another person to shoot. And as far as the helicopter idea, that came from the desire to have it so that one player can look directly down, which is nearly impossible when you're flying the aircraft. That's all the unique information from the Time magazine article. So next, there was a Kotaku interview with Mr. Miyamoto about the Star Fox demo. So the kinds of features that they're working on or already have working... with regard to the split view and of the Wii U gamepad. So basically this entire interview is about the fact that it's a split between the gamepad and the screen, the TV screen. Using the gyro sensors in the Wii U gamepad allow for some game scenarios that involve looking around in all directions, not just straight ahead, perhaps to find an exit from a level that you wouldn't otherwise be able to see just by flying around. They want to have an optional co-op mode in which one player is the pilot and the other person is the drummer, the gunner, using the motion-sensitive gamepad to aim at enemies in all directions, no matter which direction you're flying. Miyamoto wants to have some cutscenes or perhaps some quick time events that allow you to look around from within the cockpit view using the Wii U gamepad so that you feel that it's you directly involved in the action. You're not just watching a movie on television. And when using the helicopter vehicle, dropping the tethered robot onto buildings, the Wii U's gamepad display shows the view from the robot's perspective while the TV will focus on the helicopter's perspective. I already mentioned that fact previously. I apologize. Lastly, I think this is the last article I read through. Yes. Okay. So Entertainment Weekly had a short interview with Mr. Miyamoto about all of his secret projects, but the Star Fox one in particular. Now, he was saying that the Star Fox, that they were working on the Star Fox all during the Wii days, kicking around ideas, but they didn't release any games because they didn't feel, they didn't want to release a new Star Fox game that didn't innovate in some way. He said specifically that Releasing a new Star Fox game with just better graphics and better sound is not enough for Nintendo. So, again, I say, I applaud them on their choice. I think that is a good and appropriate choice. Next, Miyamoto envisions the Star Fox in the style of the Thunderbirds TV series. Now, I think he's mentioned this before when he was talking about his original inspiration, especially for Star Fox 64, which he had a hand in developing. He grew up watching these old marionette action-adventure shows. And Thunderbirds, by the way, I looked it up, is a British action television show from, I think it's the 60s or 70s, where the main characters are puppets, and much like the original Star Wars movies, they use miniature aircraft and models to model the air battles and the space battles. So Miyamoto envisions Star Fox in this style where basically Star Fox represents a crack team of adventurers who go out and save the day, you know, often for little or no reward. And he wants eventually for Star Fox to go beyond being just a vehicle-based adventure game, which is what we know today. Star Fox, at least Star Fox, Star Trek 64, Star Fox Assault, and Star Fox Command represent vehicle-based action shooters where you almost never leave your vehicle and you do most of your fighting in the vehicle. And that's what Star Fox is known for. Miyamoto wants to bring the characters out of the cockpit a little more, I suppose, and also provide for different types of transportation, including things like mechs and other ways of doing adventuring. Now, Miyamoto thinks that the Project Guard thing, the multi-camera game, experimental game that he was working on, it might somehow play into the episodic content of the new Star Fox game. He suggests perhaps using multiple gameplay modes that offer different types of gameplay to different kinds of gamer. So, for example, if you want to just play all the missions that involve, you know, flying the R-Wing, you can do that. If you want to also play, say, puzzle levels that involve managing a base and keeping enemy intruders out of a base, let's say, this is me speculating, well, then that would be a different type of Star Fox mission. And I can see only good things happening from this, except for the one possibility that they're splitting their focus. If they spend too much time on one type of gameplay, it will necessarily mean they won't spend as much time on the other type. As long as they get the flying portion, the actual R-Wing flight shooting portion of the game, playable and good, well then any other gameplay modes they can add on top of that is just icing on the cake, in my opinion. Other people, I know a lot of you, my listeners, would really prefer a Star Fox game in which is a third-person or even a first-person shooter, which I could actually, there's few things I would disagree with more, because if there's one thing Star Fox is, it's a vehicle-based shooter. But, you know, I've been surprised by things before, so who knows. Next, Miyamoto says that he prefers to play Fox McCloud in Smash Brothers, though he finds Kirby easier to use. That was one of the questions they asked. Now, lastly, and some people have suggested this might have been a mistranslation, but Miyamoto mentioned that 2014, or perhaps 2015, will be the, quote, year of Star Fox, which is similar to the out-of-nowhere announcement of 2003 and 2014 being the year of Luigi. If this is true, this is the correct translation, that will mean they will probably re-release a Star Fox game or two, maybe Star Fox 2, who knows. They'll probably make Star Fox, the original Star Fox, available for purchase on the virtual console. And they'll probably repackage old games. That could be Adventures, that could be Assault. And then they'll probably release, like, collectibles, Star Fox things in the Nintendo Club Store. I mean, they did all that sort of thing for the Year of Luigi. So they made the Super Luigi U. They made special costumes, just different things. So who knows? But if it is true, if this is going to be the year of Star Fox this upcoming year and a half, that would be fantastic because Star Fox is in dire need of some attention from everybody. And everybody knows it too. So, that's the end of my E3 coverage. We finally get some Star Fox news, and man, is it a lot. Even though it's just a tiny, tiny little demo, it's enough to just for me to talk for 30 minutes. It's ridiculous. Okay, so with that out of the way, let's get to, hopefully, towards the end of the podcast. So we got some new stuff to talk about. Okay, so like last year and the year before, I went to Everfree Northwest, and I wanted to mention that to you guys on the site because, while yes, it is ponies, not Star Fox related, it is sort of kind of indirectly related through the furry fandom, which is sort of kind of indirectly related to Crystal. So I thought I'd mention it, and I did get to meet one of you guys at last year. So I thought, hey, I'll mention it. If anybody's going, come meet me. I'll be cosplaying again. Now, this year, no one did meet me from the site, at least not that I know of, but I did have a lot of fun. This year, I cosplayed as Dr. Caballeron, one of the villains in one of the Daring Do episodes. And I didn't win the competition this year, but you know what? I had so much fun. There were 2,400 people there, which is ridiculous. I met a lot of the voice actors, including, and I didn't know that they were going to be there, I got to meet the guy who did the voice of Dr. Caballeron. Who knew, right? So I got his autograph. Now, this is something you will and should care about. You will never believe who was there at Everfree Northwest this year. Why, none other than Mr. Ken Singsho, also known as Stinkin' by his fur affinity name. He is my friend and contact with Ayano, the Japanese Crystal cosplayer who uses the Kitagumi costume. Anyway, the one we've been covering a lot lately. Well, Ayano has been working really hard on making an assault outfit. And Ken let me know once he realized who I was, because he actually didn't recognize me in the costume, which I recognized him immediately, and I was like, oh, he knows me. And then he didn't recognize me. I just went up and talked, hey, how you doing? It's been a while. Oh, how you doing? And he didn't know who I was. After 20 minutes, because we were waiting in line for the autographs, which took, that was the longest line, took the longest physical amount of time. After 20 minutes of waiting there, he like turned around and he's like, oh, you're Mr. K. Oh, hey. So I've been talking to Ayano about Star Fox Assault costume. And he says that Ayano is really making progress, and unless something like crazy goes wrong, Ayano will be done with the assault costume for next year's Further Confusion. So that's January, the first couple weeks of January is when Further Confusion is. So January 2015, we're going to have an assault Crystal cosplayer, and because of the work of Foxtype and I, we managed, because, well, basically, to thank Ayano for helping us and letting us get a video of her back in 2010 in the costume, we offered to, you know, buy her a gift or something. And the thing that she asked for is this old, like 10-year-old Nerf gun, which looks surprisingly like the gun from that Crystal holds in those promo pictures from Star Fox Assault. So we were like, okay, so she took that gun and she's been modding it for the last few months to look exactly like the Gatling gun in Star Fox Assault. And I've seen pictures, by the way. I don't think I'm supposed to post them yet, but it looks fantastic, and I can't wait to see it with the full combat suit that she's working on. So So I've got to get my plane ticket to Further Confusion to cover this momentous occasion. And who knows, there may be other Crystal cosplayers there too. I hope so. That would be fantastic. The previous year, which I still need to get those videos uploaded, there was a Fox McCloud cosplay there, and we got some great video and pictures of those two interacting, Fox and Crystal together. I've got to get those videos edited and up. That's one of my big things to do. Another big thing to do, I'll just mention offhand, is I still have the audio from my interview with the original voice actress for Crystal. Which I can't believe it, but her name is slipping me right now. Hang on. Her name is Estelle Ellis. So I did finally, this. I mentioned this before, but I have interviewed Estelle Ellis, and I just haven't gotten around to editing the podcast. So that's going to be the next thing. I'm going to edit the podcast finally and put that out, because you guys more than deserve it. Okay, so with that out of the way, now I've got some new news, stuff that's happening now or very soon. So on Monday, 2 days from now, from the date of this recording, a new character is scheduled to be announced on the official Smash Brothers website. Now, there's only 2, 3, maybe 4 characters left to reveal, so if Crystal's in the game, there's a good chance that it's going to be her reveal. If not, there's still hope, okay? Because there's because of what we've seen with the way Nintendo's operating now and the way that their business model works, we have every reason to believe that the new Smash game will be fully capable of doing DLC. So even if Crystal's not with the initial release, Crystal may still yet make it to the game. So I remain hopeful in that sense. I was contacted a few weeks ago by some very dedicated individuals who are Spanish readers of the site. They love the site. Most of them are based in Mexico, and most of them do not have English as their first language, and only a couple of them can actually read English. So Google Translate works, but you know, not terribly well. So the plan is they're going to make a sister blog off to the sides on some other host, and they will have my permission to take the content from the site and link back to the site, of course, but translate the text for our Spanish speakers. Now, they don't have anything yet, nothing to show. They're still working on getting people together to do the translation, but hopefully you'll get to see it something soon, and they're working on it. Now, as of a couple of days ago, one of the things I did to hopefully, you know, span this gap of news, I'm finally attacking my huge list of emails that need responses. My Crystal Archive email inbox has somewhere in the order of 250 emails yet that still need responses or still ongoing conversations, and I apologize for that. So if you sent me an email, I have probably received it. I probably actually read it because I actually get the Crystal Archive emails on my phone. I just haven't had a lot of time to get on the computer and physically type out the email responses to you guys. So don't give up hope. I have seen your email. I just haven't had time to get back to it. But I have actually managed a couple of responses already, some of which will make excellent podcast questions below just a few minutes when I get to that. And with that said, I will also be updating the site. I've now finished my move. I've finished going to a convention. I don't plan to go to another convention for at least a few months. And even then, it won't involve like flying to another side of the country, and I'm not going to cosplay. So there's not going to be a lot of stuff, which means I'm going to have some stable, long-term time to really work on the Crystal Archive, finally. So with that, I'll be updating the site again soon. And there are several interesting fan game projects being worked on right now, including one I recently heard about. Undying Nephilim, who is an artist who has been mentioned several times on the site for art he's done. I think he actually made a wallpaper for us once. Well, he's working on a new fan game called Star Fox Event Horizon, and it's a Star Fox mod of the Free Space 2 engine. It looks to be what Shadows of Lylat was trying to be before it went under. And yes, get hyped, because Crystal is a playable character. You can visit his website for the project and see the videos. I haven't actually even had enough time to see if there's a demo yet, but it's clearly playable. So you can go to their website. It's Star Fox EH, all one word, Star Fox EH, .weebly, W-E-E-B-L-Y, .com. Star Fox EH, Weebly.com. Sorry, Star Fox EH. Weebly.com. Now, this is This is news that you're probably only going to hear about on the podcast. I'm probably not going to make a post about this, but it just kind of worked out, and I wanted to mention it. So a guy named Sam C. contacted me months ago. And in a heartfelt email, he explained that he had read through the unfinished fanfics Echoes of the Future and A Journey Apart by Fox MC. Now, these are known as some of the longest and most popular Crystal-related fanfics, and they've been featured on the Crystal Archive almost since they've been written. They're very old. Well, as I mentioned, it's unfinished. And Sam C's heartfelt email explained that he just wanted a sense of closure, you know? He knew that the chances of this fanfic ever being finished is pretty unlikely. And so he just begged me, since he couldn't get in contact with Fox MC himself, he begged me, just ask Fox MC, if you can ever find him, to just release a summary of what would have happened, so at least he'll have some closure. Well, I got an email back from Fox MC after months of not expecting to hear anything from him ever again. I mean, I get these sort of emails all the time, especially stuff like for Gray Firefox, where, you know, some guy disappears, even though his work was, you know, important to people and people really liked it, and then they'll just disappear and you have no idea. Maybe they died, maybe they moved on with their life or started hating the series. I don't know. It's different for everybody. But they just disappear. Actually, I've gotten a couple of people emailing me saying, are you dead? Or no one's asked if everybody assumes I'm alive. They say, are you just not interested in Star Fox anymore? Or are you going to just shut down the site? And I'm like, no, I'm just busy. I'm sorry, guys. Anyway, so Fox MC came back to me and said that, you know, he gets emails all the time from people who wanted to see it, but this one was like a turning point or something, because he said, you know what, I'm going to do that. I'm going to go back and look, and at the very least, I'll make a summary. And who knows, maybe I'll post a chapter or two, you know, like an actual legit chapter. Maybe start writing again, who knows, right? Well, I got right, like literally, as I was pulling together all the information on Star Fox, the game Star Fox at E3, I was pulling together all that information looking for that stuff, and right as I was doing that, I receive an email from Fox MC saying, hey, I just want to let you know, I'm reading through all of my previous chapters, getting ready, seeing what it will take to write another chapter. He says he plans to get a new chapter out by the end of the month, so hopefully this means he's starting up again and we'll finally get like the end of these huge old stories, like my fanfic that I need to finish. Holy cow, that thing hasn't been updated in like 3 years, and I have like half of a chapter written. I just need to finish it. But don't worry, like if ever it happens that I need to summarize like what happens, I know how the story is going to end, so this will never happen, but I do need to finish that. Anyway, so Fox MC is going to try and finish his fanfic, but even if he doesn't, he's reading through the chapters so he can at least, you know, do the summary thing. So, there you go. You get some closure on these crazy long fanfics, which I thought was a great thing. It's one of the few successes we've had at contacting a guy who, you know, disappears. Now, so lastly, before I go to the podcast questions that we do at the end of this show every year, I slipped there because we only do one podcast a year, but that's not anymore. We're gonna do more than that this time. But anyway, before I get to the podcast questions, which we do at the end of the show, I wanted to call out this quote that I saw. Someone posted this on the Crystal Archive in relation to something else. I think it was relation to my, you know, Life Happens post and how I wasn't going to stop updating the site, okay? And this is my unofficial, official Crystal Archive quote of the year. And it reads, you don't ever outgrow Crystal. Like a drug of similar name, once you're into it, you're hooked for life. The only difference is that there's no pile of bike parts in your lawn. And that was The Falcon on the Crystal Archive replying to a comment about outgrowing Crystal. And I wholeheartedly agree, except for the drug part. I have no idea about the drug part, because I don't use drugs. Don't use drugs, kids. But, yes, I may outgrow super-duper interest in Crystal, but, you know, every time I come back to do a podcast or to update the site or to look at fan art, that old feeling comes back. And you should know this about me. I take a really, really long time to get over stuff. Like, when I become a fan of something, I stay a fan of something, even when it stops being cool. Like, decades after it stops being cool. Most of my listeners are actually probably too young to even remember this, but there was a book series called Animorphs that was super popular for a couple years, and then slowly died because the author actually didn't like her own work, which was weird because it was an amazing series. She actually had most of the books ghostwritten, which is whatever. Anyway, I love that series, and so does a lot of people, but you know what? Few people even hear about it. I still like that thing. If they were to make a new book, or hopefully rewriting the ending because the ending was terrible, I would buy that book and read it so hard. I don't even know. There's not even like a way to say how hard I would read it, but I would read it hard. And that they haven't had a new Animorphs book since like 2001, I think was the last. Okay. So more than 10 years ago, and I still, now obviously I'm not visiting websites about Animorphs, mostly because websites barely existed before Animorphs. You can believe that? Like, I grew up when the internet was just becoming a thing, okay? And there was like 3 Animorph websites on the internet. Anyway, so I will not outgrow Crystal in the traditional sense. And even if I somehow say, you know what, I just can't update the Crystal Archive ever anymore, I will at least leave the Crystal Archive up as an archive, because that's what it is. So, no need to worry about that. And with that, let's go on to our final section, which is podcast questions and comments. Now, I've had over a year to gather questions, so you'll notice a theme that most of these podcast questions are a little bit long. But I feel like these are pretty significant. Some of the questions are pretty important or interesting. So, I'm going to go through them. And I'm going to read through them. As always, it's kind of a tricky thing because I have to both read their writing, which is, you know, not phrased the way I would phrase it sometimes, so I'll slip over the words. And also, just reading is more difficult than just saying what comes to mind, like I've been doing this whole podcast. So, without further ado, Fox McCloud 2 writes, "For quite some time, I've been biting my tongue about the whole brony thing and their prevalence on the site, the Crystal Archive. But personal feelings aside, I do not feel it is relevant, appropriate, or staying true to what I believe is the cause and backing to the whole site, Crystal and the Star Fox series. Also, the alterations, and I guess you would call them morphs, of making Crystal into a pony, to me seems to twist her physical image, and to me, seems like a way to kind of pervert her image. Not pervert, no, I don't mean in the traditional sense of pervert, okay? Just more or less to alter what I consider to be her true, pure self. I just thought I should voice my thoughts and take from it what you wish, and I hope to hear more from you soon." So, this person, Fox McCloud 2, is expressing his disappointment, or at least his displeasure, at having brony-related news on the site. I respond that, "I'm sorry you feel that way. Pony things are indeed not directly related to Crystal. That's true. It's more of an indirect relationship, like when I talk about the furry fandom on the KA. The furry fandom being a bridge between the Crystal fandom and the pony fandom. If you're not a pony fan, that's your business, and I'm sorry that is the reason it disturbs you. I can't really make you like them or not, and I don't really want to try to. So I can't really say anything further on that subject. However, with regard to the Crystal morphs, they're going to continue to happen, and not just by ponies. Remember that there are human morphs, centaurs, chibi, and a handful of others for crystal. I encourage you to not take it so seriously. The people who are making these crystal ponies are not doing it because they dislike crystal or ponies, but because they like both. It's a crossover. And while crossovers are often groan-worthy, especially fanfics, I feel that they are ultimately harmless. Imagine the Star Fox Adventure storyline just with all the characters being ponies. It could easily work. You know, Miyamoto could have just as easily made Star Fox be a human team fighting a human Andross and Star Wolf team, and it would have made about the same amount of sense and be similarly fun to play. If it's just a matter of not keeping the site pure, I want you to know that I take this very seriously. Websites that are about fandoms can easily die if they do not keep their focus strictly on the content of their fandom. However, I will occasionally talk about non-crystal things on the site. I even started talking about Star Fox more, even though that's not technically crystal directly related. Such posts will likely continue, and I always try to make them at least somewhat crystal related. I promise to you and to everyone on the site that this site will not become something else, a general Star Fox site, a furry community site, for example. It will always be the crystal place on the internet, but there will occasionally be side posts, and that's just the way it is going to be. I thank you for your opinion, and please feel free to express your opinion on these kinds of matters. I do think it's important to let your voice be known, even if we disagree. Jordan writes, have you ever considered putting share buttons on your posts? Maybe like a tweet button, since the content of your site, furries, crystal, and stuff, it doesn't seem like it's the kind of thing that most people would want to share on Facebook, where there are friends and family who would see that and not get it, or they may not even like it. But Twitter followers seem like they would be more receptive audience if someone they're following tweets a Crystal Archive post. Speaking of which, why not get the Crystal Archive a specific Twitter account? Then you can send out a tweet as soon as you make a new post and communicate with other fans. Do you already have a Twitter account with your real name? I responded that I've thought about it, and you're right. People, myself included, would prefer to keep their real life and their furry/crystal fandom separate. Twitter might be okay, since I could integrate it into automatically post when I change something. But the fact is, that's what RSS is for, a really simple syndication, which the Crystal Archive has supported for almost 7 years. There's even a service for it that converts RSS to Twitter feeds. It's called twitterfeed.com. Strange story. A few years ago, someone actually got the Crystal Archive, in quotes, Crystal Archive Twitter account, and posted as me using my real photo that I hadn't posted on the Crystal Archive. I actually had to get Twitter to suspend the account because there was no getting it back. Like, I tried to contact this Twitter account because I didn't make it. Someone else somehow found enough about me and was posting as me, posting, and they weren't posting bad things. Like, it wasn't like they got the name and then started posting bashing posts, right? They were posting as if they were me, so much so that I thought I had created it and forgotten about it. But it turns out, no, it really, somebody really legitimately made a Twitter account and then posted as me and then left. And that's really, really weird. So I got that suspended. So I don't know, but I'm considering it. Anyway, I did get an account, to answer the last question, I did get an account using my real name a while back for posting stuff about myself and my job, but in the end I lost interest and I deleted my account. I still have a blog though, my real life blog. Twitter has never really been interesting or helpful to me. If I have something to say, it usually requires more than 140 characters. Now, to follow up, I am considering making a system by which I have some kind of official Crystal Archive Facebook account and an official Crystal Archive Twitter account and so on, a Google Plus. Actually, I do have one of those now. That's one thing I forgot to mention. I went ahead and set up a fake semi-official, well, it's not fake, it's an official Crystal Archive Google Plus account And it's connected to the YouTube account for the Crystal Archive. So now, instead of seeing my picture, you see a picture of Crystal on that account. So, I plan so that whenever I post on the archive, not only does it go out on archive on the RSS feed, it's also going to go out as a Twitter post and a Google Plus post and maybe even a Facebook post if I can manage it. We'll see. So look forward to that. Toby Brocky writes, I wanted to ask you if the crystal model made by Gadonstrium really was created from scratch, or if he ripped the model and fixed it up. There seems to be a lot of people saying it was ripped from the game, and I want to make sure that that was actually the case here. Could you give me a bit of insight and more details on this? Did Gadonstrium say that he didn't rip it? I responded that, okay, here's the deal. With the Gadonstrium models, yes, he did get the model data from the actual games, first of all, which is commonly referred to as ripping. However, as he told me, the models were so corrupted and warped when he got them that they were unusable in the purely ripped form. So he hand-edited them back into place, as close as he could get to the actual in-game models. Originally, I posted them as, quote, ripped models, but then he contacted me and said that he was insulted that I would use that term, considering how much model editing he had to do to get them in the state they are now. So, sorry, that's not really a yes or no answer, but this is the story as I understand it. Seabones 2009 writes, Hey, Mr. K, I'm not a brony or a furry. Well, I used to be a fur, but a lot of the fandom got to be too major for me, and long story short, I left. But I very much enjoy the Star Fox series, and while I didn't like it as much during Command, I'm so glad they're unveiling a new one this next summer. I know lots of video games and have various theories, such as Mario in the presence of booze, or how every block in the kingdom was originally a person, and one came to mind to me the other day about Crystal. I don't know about you, but based on what I've seen on how Rare originally intended adventures to be made, called Dinosaur Planet originally, the finished product of Star Fox Adventures is some sort of Frankenstein's monster. A cut and pasted backstory, no continuity, no further explanation of where Serenity is, and stuff like that. Then it hit me. What if, just like some have assumed that Ash Ketchum or Harry Potter, they never really existed and went on an adventure instead as people in a coma the whole time. So what if Serenia never really existed? Think about it. If Crystal was a resident of Soria, which sounds similar to Serenia, and either witnessed her tribe being killed and her being part of the tribe would explain her clothing instead of her being a sleaze, or was raised without knowledge of her parents by someone else. Couldn't the stress of that environment give her a reason to create another world in her mind? She's also the only one who seems to know anything about Serenia, which has told me that perhaps it's not real. Anyway, that's just an idea I had. Thought it could explain a lot and give me some nice closure to the series. Please let me know what you think. Peace! I responded, Well, the theory that all blocks in the Mushroom Kingdom are actually transformed toads is true. That's actually the story as written in the original Super Mario Bros. Instruction Manual. Well, I can tell you for certain that Star Fox Adventures was a mishmash of game ideas from both the Star Fox series and the original Dinosaur Planet game that they were working on. Keep in mind that it wasn't called Soria until Assault, a game by Namco, not Rare. Rare called it Dinosaur Planet. So I don't think that Soria and Serenia sounding similar would mean anything here. Also, not all cultures who have women wearing minimal clothing are sleazy cultures. Visit Hawaii in the summertime and see what people are wearing around town sometime. The game explains that Crystal was the only survivor of the Serenian disaster, so it's entirely understandable that she would be one of the few people who knew about it. There's no indication that people don't know about it, just that nothing is said about it either way. Finally, if Crystal was in a coma, then does that mean that she dreamed up Star Fox, Star Fox 64, Star Fox Assault, and Star Fox Command 2? If so, why isn't she in half of those games? It would be hard to justify that a game was created as the dream of a character who wouldn't be invented for almost 10 years by a different company. So, I don't think the coma theory holds much water. I don't think the coma theory holds much water. In spite of how many plot holes are in Star Fox Adventures. Hey, keep thinking though. You never know when some new idea might explain more than previous explanations. Now, someone named Roy sent me an absolutely massive email that requires a similarly massive response. The subject line of his email was, "The longest Crystal email you'll ever read," or something like that. And it reads, "Dear Mr. Crystal, if you'll take a minute or five, I can absolutely fulfill the promise I made in the subject headline I didn't totally make up just so you would read this long block of text. Disclaimer, as I type this up and read it over and realize that you might think I'm absolutely insane for thinking this email was necessary, please allow me to explain, or feel free to skip to the too long didn't read section at the end. An extremely long, thinking about it makes me feel old time ago, when I was still a young one, I remember going to GameStop and seeing a game being demoed in the store. Upon inspection, I became incredibly overjoyed at what I thought was a Pokemon trainer riding a Charizard while battling a flying battleship in the middle of a thunderstorm. Sound familiar? Therefore, I was somewhat confused when I defeated the ship, and the next cutscene revealed not a Pokemon trainer, but a blue fox. Unfortunately, the trial timed out there, and I was scolded once again for wandering away without asking permission first. I never bought the game. I don't even think I had a GameCube at the time, but for some reason that game demo remained in the back of my mind where I thought I had forgotten about it. Cut to about 4 years ago, I happened to stumble across an image on the internet, the one that says, 'Dude, it's cool. Everyone's furry for Crystal.' The memories came pouring back, and my curiosity got the best of me. I googled her name, and one of the first results was the Crystal Archive. I can't explain why, but I soon became obsessed with all the content on your site and everything Star Fox and Crystal related. As crazy as it sounds, your site introduced me to online interactions and conversations, specifically at Star Fox Online. I took on the persona DragonFox05 and started joining in the forum boards, and then leading me onto Steam, DeviantArt, and other websites. This was probably unheard of for me, because in real life I'm an extremely shy bookworm who didn't talk much to anyone. I soon came to love daily checking in to see if other users I had made friends with were online and had contributed to the RP posts. Though I can't locate any of my comments I had made on the Star Fox Online archives, I'm pretty sure they were awkward, obnoxious, and full with badly timed jokes and cringe-worthy puns. I'm kind of glad I can't find them. Another important thing I was introduced to during this time goes back to my first image of Crystal on the internet. I discovered with great shock what a furry was. But since some of my friends I had met with online, and you being a former one, were furries, I read up about them instead of turning away and immediately bad-mouthing it. While I found some of the content disturbing, I grew fond of the idea of identifying oneself with anthropomorphic animals and began to consider myself one. It was this membership with the furry fandom that helped with the next thing I was introduced to, bronies. I remember first hearing about them around the beginning of Season 2, and once again, my curiosity was piqued. I'm not sure I would have gotten into My Little Pony Friendship is Magic or given it a chance if I had not already tested the waters as a furry, but I instantly fell in love with the show after the first episode. This led me wholeheartedly to embrace the brony fandom, drawing from my previous experiences with Star Fox Online, making friends with people online. The predominant event at the time was stumbling across a website called Obsession is Magic, a lesser-known pony news website, upon which I soon became an editor under the name Chameleon. though it was mostly just an excuse to give a title to my literal obsession with all things pony. As an editor, I made some lifelong friends with the other editors and took my first job, and most importantly, had fun making a contribution to the fandom, however small that might have been. As this was all happening on the internet, it began to spill over into my personal life. I was getting more confident. I was making friends easily, and I started applying the same work ethic to my schoolwork that I did posting online as my editor job. And while I never consciously tried to exemplify the moral lessons taught by My Little Pony Friendship is Magic, all of my experiences made me much more accepting and a kinder person than I used to be. Nowadays, I don't consider myself a furry or even a brony since I stopped watching after season 3. I'm not on the internet as often as I used to be since things in my personal life began to turn around, and suddenly I'm realizing that there's plenty out there to do that doesn't involve a computer. Not that I don't have respect for the show and in other fandoms, or that I don't look back fondly on those days, but I think that it was just a phase of my life that I have now moved on from. Overall, I grew out of my antisocial shell that stayed up till 4 in the morning on the internet and slept through class the next day. I believe that events of a person's past have a domino effect on the events of their present. Looking back on all this, I felt the need to email you because I thank you in your website. They were the building block that led me to becoming the better person I am today. You might say I should send the similar email to GameStop, since they were the ones who demoed Star Fox Adventures in the first place. But I don't feel like being asked 50 million times about getting a power-up membership. And I think you're the one who deserves the thank you more. Though I'm sure one of the objectives of the Crystal Archive was not to, quote, turn spastic, strange, fledgling children into socially acceptable stand-up citizens, it is a goal you unintentionally achieved. At least for me. And I thought it would be pretty cool and not creepy whatsoever to express my appreciation and then write a page or two explanation as to why there's any appreciation in the first place. Too long didn't read. Stumbling upon your website, the Crystal Archive, led to a series of fortunate events that introduced me to the furry and brony fandom, garnered me some lifelong friends, and overall made me a better human being. You rock. Woohoo! Now I respond, "Hi, DragonFox05, don't worry, you're not insane. Others have had similar reactions to the site, not to mention myself. No less than a dozen people have expressed that Crystal and the Crystal Archive itself have had a major influence on their life, and always for the better. As the person who made the site, I have been blessed to meet interesting people and know that I have helped them in some small way. It's a great feeling. That demo does sound familiar. It was how I first heard about Crystal, though for me, it was at a Walmart late at night after I had finished my evening college classes. I would often visit after class every week or so because I knew when they switched out the game demo discs. However, I knew this was the Star Fox game that would be coming out soon. What I never expected from a Star Fox game or from Nintendo themselves was such a beautiful and scantily clad heroine. I thought the idea of Star Fox and dinosaurs working together, well, it seemed, frankly, rather ridiculous and hilarious. It is very interesting that you would become obsessed with Crystal without ever having at least played Star Fox Adventures, I mean the full game. I didn't even become obsessed with Crystal until like a year or so after beating the game. Well, obsessed is the wrong word. Let's go with highly focused on Crystal. I, too, was a shy bookworm, preferring to communicate with computers more than people. Running a site professionally and later doing stuff in the brony community gained me much confidence in public. I have successfully competed in a public cosplaying event twice as pony characters without feeling much embarrassment or even concern about what other people might think of me for doing so. Gaining confidence through experience is part of growing up, it seems. Everything builds on your past experiences, as you said. As long as you are trying to improve, it is good to be confident in your beliefs and interests. For many, My Little Pony represents the first time in their lives that they've had a positive moral instruction on how to act towards others, especially in the context of friendship. In some ways, this horrifies me a little bit. I grew up in a very traditional, moral family where right and wrong were not only taught, but explained in exhaustive detail. My siblings and I not only knew right from wrong, but could tell you exactly why right things were right and wrong things were wrong. This kind of instruction seems completely missing from formal education, and many parents don't know how to teach these lessons or don't even know them themselves. I worry about the societal effects that this has and will have in the future. Thankfully, My Little Pony represents one of the only examples in recent history that puts moral lessons in a format that is not only entertaining and applicable, but also doesn't feel like they're being shoved down your throat. The ponies are living by example, which is a very effective way to convince people to live in peace and do good. People are almost never convinced to change the way they live by debate or lecture, no matter how researched or watertight your argument is. I'm glad you are living a productive life focused on real-life experiences. However, I only suggest that you take a little time for ponies and video games. Not a lot, just a little. Certain video games can be sublime experiences, more influential than any book, because the actions are happening directly to you. Likewise, I shouldn't have to explain the advantages of at least casually watching My Little Pony. You don't have to obsess to enjoy a fandom. Indeed, I have been relatively hands-off on my approach to My Little Pony. The temptation was there, back in 2010, for me to get involved and do for My Little Pony what I did for Crystal back in the day. But I knew that I still had my responsibilities to the Crystal fans and the site, and I didn't think I could split my focus that much. Believe it or not, one of the primary goals of the Crystal Archive, even from its inception, when it was just a twinkle in my eye, was exactly to have the kind of positive effect on the Crystal community that you speak of. Before the Crystal Archive, the Crystal fans were primarily on various Star Fox forums, the Crystal Lovers Association, and various adult image groups. Now, I don't have anything against Star Fox forums or the Crystal Lovers Association. Indeed, I was a member of both of these things. But I did have a problem with the adult groups. I saw a lot of potential in Crystal fans and Crystal herself to bring people together in a positive way. My firm stance against mature images and even limiting the kind of speech that I allowed on the site, no coarse language, for example, was a passive invitation to Crystal fans. No one had to come to my site. They could stay on the adult groups or whatever. I like to think that I had something to offer that they couldn't get from those places. Remarkably few people ever complained about the no adult images rule on the site. I think somewhere around three total people in the entire 8 years ever complained about that, whereas a dozen people have been like you, citing the site as the reason they became better people. Dozens and dozens more have simply come to the site and expressed how much joy and happiness they get from the content I post there. More than anything else in my life, the Crystal Archive has been my lead-by-example project. I count it as one of my greatest personal successes. So thank you for enjoying the site and explaining how much it has helped you. It makes me happy when you smile, and it fills my heart with sunshine all the while. Yes, it does. Don't be a stranger. Oh, and if you still haven't played Star Fox Adventures, get yourself a used copy and a used GameCube and finish that game, because you need to. And our last, that was a long one. Our last email comes from Dalton, who writes, "Okay, I've played Star Fox 64, Adventures, and Assault, but I didn't play Star Fox Command because I don't own a DS. Can you tell me what happens in that game?" Well, that in itself requires like several hours worth of explanation, but fortunately for us, I'd be happy to help, because while the story of Command is complicated, I made a handy-dandy website devoted to just this exact thing that shows not only the story, intro and outro, and all the different missions, but also how they connect to each other, because it's a branching paths, a map of different missions. And you can find that at sfc.crystalarchive.com. It's called Star Fox Command, All the Words. And I hope you enjoy it. And that's all the questions I have for this podcast. Wow, this has been a really long one. See, I started this thing thinking, oh, there's not going to be enough content for a podcast. But look at this. We're here at 2 hours and 5 minutes on my recording. I've got to cut some parts out of it. But it's going to end up being just under 2 hours when I finish editing it down. So, wow, guys. This has been the first podcast, episode 32. First podcast in over a year. I hope you enjoy it. I worked really hard on it, like 2.5 hours of researching Star Fox and all the other stuff. So, whew, it feels good. I'm about to lose my voice. Hopefully we'll do this again in like a month this time, not like a year. So with that, I'm Mr. Crystal, signing off once again for the Crystal Archive Podcast. Hope you enjoy, and we'll see you on the site. Later.